Good evening and welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back. Hey, good evening, everybody. Welcome once again to the show. I'm Willie Hassel, along with the lovely, the mystical, the mysterious Lynn Nickerson.
My goodness. Hello, Willie. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good to see you. Happy day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, actually.
Yes, well, yeah.
It won't be by the time you see this, but it is today.
Yeah.
So, hey, we have two great guests in the studio tonight.
One of my most favorite paranormal topics. I've got a couple that I'm really fond of, and this is one of them.
All right. Well, we have the paranormal couple.
Yes.
The haunted paranormal couple.
The paranormal couple.
I forget exactly what you...
With haunted objects couple. In a museum.
Anyway,
something like
Cody Ray Desbians and Satori Hawes from TAPS, Ghost Hunters...
Ghost Nation.
Ghost Nation. That's the one I was trying to think of. So, hey, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Welcome. It's great to have you both here.
Thank you for coming up.
Our pleasure.
It's been a while. Good to see you guys again.
Yeah, it has been a while.
Yeah, Willie was on, Cody was on our Spirit Radio show.
He was on the Spirit Radio show.
A couple of years ago. That was fascinating.
Came up to Kittery.
Yep.
But unfortunately, had to leave. But
I did.
And at the time, you were focusing on EVPs.
I was, and analysis.
And you're still into that. You still incorporate that into what you're doing now, right?
Oh, yeah. I still love EVP. I still love the whole...
It's fascinating.
Absolutely. It's so fascinating. I love that.
You were more or less the scientific-minded guy.
I love the tech.
Until this came along.
That's true.
You know, they go hand in hand, really.
Oh, yeah.
What fascinates me about the EVPs is... You've got the physicality of a voice that doesn't exist, and then you've got vibration. So where does the vibration come from? And the same thing with a ghost. You've got clothes on a ghost often.
Absolutely.
And, you know, clothes aren't part of the paranormal. So that leads you to different questions. And I think that the whole idea of EVPs is very intriguing.
Oh, absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. We've pulled some really interesting stuff through that format, and it's
EVP,
just so interesting.
EVP is one of our favorites because it's something you can't really argue with.
Right.
It's there.
It's there.
It's not like a photograph or a video that maybe.
Right. Yeah, you can hear this.
You have to spend a lot of time trying to debunk light anomalies on photos, but the EVPs usually are pretty solid.
Absolutely.
And let's get it straight. Your whole venue is the Museum of Objects, Oddities, and Curiosities.
That's it.
And those happen to be, voila, some haunted objects here.
It is. Yep.
So we wanted to get an idea of how this all came about. Well, why don't you start with the interesting story about meeting Tracy and how you were trying to get a hold of TAPS.
That's right,
I think that's very auspicious what happened there.
It is. So I, of course, probably like a lot of other paranormal investigators, wanted to be a part of TAPS. And especially when I found out that they were just one state over from me in Rhode Island. And I, of course, did not know Satori or anybody involved with the group. So I sent an email, like probably anybody else would, a few times. And the answer was always no. Nope.
We're not looking for anybody.
I was like, oh, okay. So I ended up.
Will you ever live that down?
No, probably not.
And that was about 10 years ago.
That was about 10 years ago now. Jeez. Yeah. So I ended up joining another team in Rhode Island. And unbeknownst to me, the first private case that we went on, I get paired up with a woman that I had never met. I knew she wasn't part of the team because I had never seen her before. And we hit it off. We did really well together. We got great evidence. Questions were great. We just really worked well together. And by the end of the night, she introduced herself. She says, "I am Tracy, and I'm the case manager with TAPS." Ooh. And I was like, "What?" She goes, "I would love to talk to Jason, Satori's father, and see if you can help us out." And I was like, "Okay, I guess I'm available. I could
I can fit that in.
I guess I can do it. I guess I can help you out. So then I ended up joining TAPS, and you know, I guess it's any paranormal investigator's dream to have a caseload like that. You know,
wow,
so many emails, and I know just the right place at the right time, I think, and it just works out. It's so strange. So many things in my life have happened that way. It's just very weird. It's very strange. I think everything definitely happens for a reason,
and it happens
when it's supposed to happen. I think, you know. So yeah, that was.
We're still waiting.
Very ironic.
Yeah. We know some of the famous people, but as far as it goes.
As we get to brush collars with them and whatnot.
Oh.
But that is so cool.
Yeah.
To finally go what you want.
How did you happen to meet up?
Sure. Well, I think our stories differ a little bit.
Okay.
I'll let Satori share her story.
Yes. So a couple years ago, I decided, you know, I've been investigating since I was able to hold a flashlight. I wanted to be like my dad. So
dad is?
Jason Hawes, who founded TAPS in 1990. So I wanted to be just like him. I investigated my house as soon as I was able to. Yeah, I was obsessed, and I wanted to be just like him. So a couple years ago, I don't know how many years ago now, I decided I wanted to be part of the team professionally and help people.
And what point, what age were you then?
17, 18?
Okay.
Yeah.
So you weren't a little kid.
No, I wasn't. I had to be old enough where my dad, you know, knew that I was going to be professional about it and safe about it. So I decided to go on my first case event, and the case manager, Tracy, at the time, was very excited for me to join the team.
I've got somebody I want you to meet.
And she goes, okay, it's in Connecticut. So I get a message not too late after, I get a message from Cody, and it says, hi, I hear you're joining the team. You know, I'm heading that way anyway. I'll pick you up on the way and take you. No, he wasn't. He drove an hour off route to come pick me up.
That's the part I don't agree
you
with.
You do. And
you just don't want to.
Exactly.
We became friends instantly, and a couple years later, we decided that we wanted to be in a relationship together. I liked him, so I kept him.
Good deal. Yeah. Now, you mentioned something on your site about you get intelligent communication when the two of you are hooked up. So, number one, how does that manifest itself? And number two, what's your methodology? I heard something about wrist touching and whatnot.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So you guys know me. I've always been a very technical-based investigator.
Meat and potatoes investigator. Yeah.
And, you know, I say this now. Unfortunately, I didn't pay that much attention to the metaphysical side of the paranormal.
Most men don't.
Yeah. So I kind of regret that now a bit. So when I met Satori, some strange stuff started to happen that had never happened before. And the only way I can explain this is I think when certain living energies meet and they fit together like a puzzle piece, I think it kind of flips on that light switch a little brighter to kind of draw this stuff in. I mean, we've all worked with investigators and other people, and, you know, you get that feeling that just, geez, this is a good group of people. I think it's going to be a good night, and then stuff happens. And other times you have other groups of people, and it just doesn't work out, feel that. So Satori and myself, when we started working together, we've always been partnered up since she joined the team, and that's the only time we would get really good evidence. And the first case, we thought it was just a really active location.
How footsteps and things like that.
A lot of footsteps.
Would this be John Rogers?
That was more recently.
That was more recent. This was just footsteps in this little antique store, but we didn't know, you know, anything about it. I actually accidentally brushed up against your shoulder that night when that happened, I believe, because that's what the other people on the team were saying.
Right.
And you got a shock? Is that what happened?
pretty much.
We just thought the location was very active, and then we realized a couple times later that it was happening in other locations, and so we were realizing.
It was his electrifying personality.
Oh, yes, that was 100% what it
Thanks,
was.
Thanks, Willie.
But after a while, we started asking questions and developed this kind of language of communication through the sounds that we were hearing, and we were getting intelligent responses.
Right.
Okay, so I heard something about you actually hearing something when you're trying to get responses.
Right.
I mean, other people hear
absolutely.
So along that line, could you tell us the story of John Rogers?
Yeah, so John Rogers, that was another case. So we found over the years, we kept this actually a secret for a couple years.
Since 2018.
Because the amount of information we were pulling out of this method or technique, whatever you want to call it, was pretty astounding.
When
it still kind of freaks me out.
It was 100% accuracy when we did get something.
Right, and we talked to so many people about this, and we found that when we hold hands, it definitely elevates whatever's going on. We're not mediums in the sense that we, you know,
not psychics for what you know them
right.
to be.
We're you know, probably just psychic as any other normal person. But what happens is the John Rogers story, that was an interesting case. We were at a private location. It wasn't a home. And at this building, we held hands and did the way we communicate. And a gentleman comes walking through. We ask him his name. And Satori usually goes through the alphabet and asks whoever's there, if we get somebody there, to knock on a letter, and then we'll spell out words and things like that. Okay. And he spelled out John Rogers, his name.
Yeah.
And
his full name.
Yep.
His full
name. He also told us the exact day he died to confirm, you know, and people went after this case. They looked through and found out that this was a real person that was with this location.
Right. And a few people from the location that, you know, were alive and kind of maintain it were standing outside. And they were just kind of watching over the building. They wanted to stay out of the team's way. And as we're communicating with this John Rogers gentleman, you know, he starts saying, I forget who the gentleman's name was. I think it was Mike or something. And he goes, you know, I know Mike who's outside. And, you know, I used to mentor him. And so we're like, okay. So we walk out. Is there a Mike here? He goes, yeah, I'm here.
I couldn't remember the name if I tried.
Yeah. And he comes walking in, and they start having a conversation back and forth.
Mike and John Rogers?
Yeah.
A living person us, yeah. and a deceased person were having a conversation.
Wow. What was the communication? Was he using the letter, or was he hearing something?
He was using letters. The living gentleman would say, ask questions, and he would respond. And at one point, they actually asked a trick question because, you know, you can never be too careful.
Right.
So I think they asked, do you remember being a policeman? And he corrected us, and he said, no, I was a fireman. And then you go look through the documents and found out he was a fireman, and right. that's what he loved.
Yeah. So when this happens, all of these knocks are very loud.
Everyone
and everybody
hears
in the room
oh,
can
so
hear
he
it.
Oh, so he was knocking. That's what
yes.
it was. Okay.
Yeah, that's
I didn't
usually,
know if you heard voices.
Right. That's usually what the form that we ask when we get somebody there.
I think because, it saves energy if we
right.
were.
It does.
And
yeah.
it's something that everybody can hear. You know, you're not just trusting our word for it. And, you know, we're not hearing anything, you know, in our minds or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting thing. And we'd love to meet, you know, some other people that could do it. But we just haven't found them yet. You know,
nobody
we've talked
yet.
To.
Because you're special.
I don't
so
know.
Are you both like touching in contact while you're doing this?
Yes, it has to be some form of contact.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like a battery, and that's the best way, you know, like my family has described it, possibly like a battery, two wires coming together.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. Usually she holds my hands, but we found that when she holds my wrist, it's a little stronger for some
very
reason,
sensitive.
Which is interesting. Yeah. I don't know.
I saw that video last night on one of the shows.
Oh. Yeah.
It was amazing.
It is.
Thank you.
It still amazes me. It blows me away. It blows me away.
We had the answers we'd give them, but we don't.
We don't.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah. So how is it that you embarked on the museum?
Interesting story. So I've kind of always had an interest in objects. The first object that, you know, I ever received was something from my family, my grandfather on my mom's
that's
side.
An interesting story.
Yep. So it was a painting of Christ, huge painting. And it belonged to my great-grandfather, originally in Italy, and it hung in every one of my grandfather's bedrooms. And they would pray to it every single night, Roman Catholics. And the story goes, I was always told the story by my grandparents as I was growing up, that when my great-grandfather was, you know, on his deathbed, he was extremely scared to pass away. And he was praying to this painting one night. And the painting supposedly started talking to him and telling him that everything was going to be okay. He was going to have a peaceful transition. And, you know, after that experience, he was at peace and ended up passing away peacefully. When he did die, it was passed down to my grandfather. And, you know, sometimes I remember being little and walking in on him praying to it. And, you know, he would always tell me that story. And he unfortunately passed away at home as well. And he had a similar experience before he passed. He said that his mother was standing there and the painting told him that everything was going to be okay. And, you know, his mom was going to help him get to the other side. And he told me that was one of the last things he told me, before he passed away. And then once he passed, the painting was given to me And thankfully, it hasn't talked to me yet, which is a good sign.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my first interest in how is this possible? How could an object communicate like that? Mm. So that kind of always, you know, hung in my office after that. And when the whole, you know, current situation of the world happened, the pandemic, we started really pushing social media because we didn't really have anything else to do. All events were canceled and films, you know, not happening. So we started pushing out on different platforms, and we would make different videos and do live streams. And the things that stuck was when we would talk about an object. And so we're like, okay, people like this stuff. Let's start talking about it more. And then it just blew up. People, we gained 100,000 followers within 2 months on TikTok.
That's
and
wonderful.
It blew up, and people started sending us stuff from around the world.
Sometimes with no warning, they would just show up or things like that.
Yeah.
A little dangerous.
A little bit.
It is. But a good portion. So we're at about 350 items right now, and a good portion of them each have a case file. And we've been able to, we love communicating with whoever owned it previously firsthand. Whether if we can't be there in person, we'd like to either do it over a video, you know, conference type deal to just see the person face to face and read their emotions and build a case file off of that. So every object that comes into the museum, we put it through what we call a quarantine period, where we kind of watch it for about 2 or 3 weeks just to see what happens.
Other people use that methodology too.
Yeah.
Kind of isolate them and watch.
Yep. Yep. So 9 times out of 10, nothing happens within those 3 weeks.
We're not trying to steal objects from people or make sure they can never have them back. We're actually given the nickname the foster home for paranormal objects.
I think that's excellent.
Because we want to make sure that you still own your object. We're just taking care of it for you if you can't.
And if someday you want it back,
you can have it back. Yep.
Well, then I've got to ask you, because you don't always know what you're getting. So how do you guys protect yourselves?
Good question. Well, you know, everybody does this differently. Thankfully, we're friends with a lot of different collectors. And I think, you know, religion kind of falls in on this as well. It's whatever you believe in.
Intention. So that's,
intentions are everything. So Satori's definitely taught me that. Again, the metaphysical side of things I wasn't really
very
too
important.
Familiar with. So, you know, I have my background growing up as Roman Catholic. So, of course, Satori and myself kind of differ when it comes to protecting ourselves. We definitely don't do anything that we're not comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
We're comfortable holding the objects. Some museums aren't. Our friends at the Warren Museum, they like to cover their hands and have a priest come in once a month, which is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Our friend, one of our, you know, mentors, John Zaffis, he's comfortable with touching his objects. We're comfortable touching our objects. So Satori's more of the crystals and sage.
I have crystals in my pocket right now.
It's
and,
a good idea.
I'm more of, you know, the prayer cards and things like that. You know, since we've been doing this for a while, we're kind of in the middle of it all. We've met, we've learned so much about different religions collecting objects from around the world, and we found that so many of them are very common. They all believe in something good and something bad.
A place you go after life.
Yeah. For the most part. And, so I'm kind of in the middle of it all now. We just believe in whatever we believe in. I usually tell people, if you, believe that a jug of milk is going to protect you, then believe in that. Set your intentions on that, and it should work. It should work, you know.
But the idea, the principle is to ask for protection, some sort of guiding force or something relative to your beliefs, your belief system.
Yeah, absolutely.
We had Sam Beltruzis on. He's the author of like 13 books of the paranormal.
Yep.
He was talking about a woman who had 2 haunted dolls, but one of them was decidedly unhealthy to be around. Everyone who came in contact with it got sick.
Mm-hmm.
And the owner herself wound up getting a blood disease. She won't let go of it. And Sam and I were both thinking that this woman is entranced. She's charmed.
Yeah.
So have you run across something like that where you almost felt either possession or controlled in some way?
Interesting. We have come across a lot of cases where people do feel like they're attached to it. We've had plenty of cases where people have felt like this magnetic pull that they described to be drawn into to purchase something.
Or they don't realize that they are being affected by something because they're obsessed with it.
Right. And sometimes they don't want to get rid of their object.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not our goal, is to take the object. So we give them some advice and some techniques to use to coexist with it in a healthy way. Because some people, they do get really involved, and they are really attached. So we usually recommend in those situations that if you are going to keep this, because we can't make you do anything, If you are going to keep this, then keep it in a section of your home that you don't frequently go in, whether it's a basement or a closet, and keep it in there and move it away from your living space so you're not around it often. And usually we found that there's a big decrease in activity when you remove the living element from the object.
Yep, they can't feed off of you.
Right. So if that don't work, I mean, there's only so far we can take it. Like I said, we can't force anybody to do anything. All we can do is recommend. And unfortunately, some of those cases, they end up turning out really, you know, bad. They end up heading in a bad direction before it turns around. We never get in over our heads. So if it ever comes to that point, we usually call some of our friends that deal in the more negative side of things and stuff like that.
You mentioned something about not wanting to get rid of something that might be haunted.
Yeah.
Why is that?
So our belief in this is that a lot of our objects, you know, 99% of the objects we think have some sort of haunting or attachment or things like that, they're not really evil. We like to think that maybe it's just people that love them very much because we've never had any real negative interactions with them. It's always been respectful. Yeah, it's always been very respectful to us, especially if we lay down our ground rules when they come into our home. But we always encourage others to never try to destroy or throw away these objects right away because we fear that if we're not involved at that point and you do something like that, that may just make the person, if it's a person, very upset that you kind of broke their item, very upset that you did that, and that may make their energy more negative. That may make them kind of lash out at you more. So we feel that it's safer out of respect to possibly just remove it.
Right. And we have come into situations with some objects where, think of it this way, if there was something that you loved a lot when you were alive, and when you passed away, your possessions end up in secondhand stores, and thrift stores, and things like that, and then somebody purchases the thing that you loved a lot, and they bring it home, and maybe you don't like that person that much. Maybe they're not that good of a person. So you start acting up inside of their house because you don't like them. And as soon as the object is removed and moved to a new environment,
They're different.
So we find that respect definitely goes a long way when it comes to our objects. And, you know, like Satori said, we believe at least, you know, over 90% of them are just people that, you know, they're not with the objects all the time. They just kind of check in on them once in a while and see how they're doing. And then, you know, go off to wherever they're at, you know.
And you said, I believe, that you consider the objects kind of like your family.
Absolutely. Yeah, we definitely, when we go into the museum, so the home-based museum consists of basement and then an off-building. And, you know, we definitely, you know, keep it away from our living environment, for sure. But we're there often. And whenever we go there, we definitely say hello. Satori's always saying good morning and good night.
Well, that's good.
Ask them how they are. And we always tell them when they first come in, you can go anywhere you want outside, wherever you go. Just do not come into our part of our living space because that's our space. You have yours. We have ours. And it's always worked. We've never had anything negative happen in our living space. And we treat them kind of like family. I'll come in, see, how are you? I hope you're doing well. And we get positive activity after we just kind of communicate with them as if they are still alive with us.
You know, it kind of reminds me of Sel when he had the Shanley Hotel. You know, he would treat all the spirits at the hotel as he called them the good old boys and girls. And he would always go in, he said, you know, hi to all the spirits. It sounds
well, they're kind people.
Very, very respectful.
But what about the case where something is acting like a portal? I was speaking to Satori about a religious iconic picture that I had. It was like a piece of either satin or silk that had the picture of like a Botticelli painting. So it was like a medieval painting of the Madonna and Child. And it had a concave glass over it and a little gilded frame, and I thought it was beautiful. And I picked it up at like what was tantamount to like a thrift shop when you didn't have to pay for it. So it was at the dump and someone had thrown it out to get recycled. Somebody else could love it, you know. So I couldn't figure out why someone had thrown out something so beautiful.
Interesting.
I took it home. Things started happening, but I never made the connection. I went from Maine to Arizona. So 10 years had passed. And all the time, it seems like wherever I live, there's something happening anyway. And then I went to a witch's ball in Phoenix. And we got like 10-minute readings free of charge. And this woman said to me, there's something like a painting in your house. I'm thinking, I haven't got any artwork. I really don't know what you mean, but I'll reevaluate this when I go home. She said, get it out. So at the time, I was working at a hotel, and I had a horrible argument with the supervisor. When I came home that night, a ceramic piece of artwork that I had on the wall wasn't there. And I thought, what the heck happened? Nobody broke in. I walked around the foot of the bed, and there it was on the floor right underneath the painting.
Interesting.
The hook was still on the wall.
Wow.
So there was some negative energy. So I had a lot of psychic friends, and I asked them about it. What could possibly be going on here?
Yeah.
And I got that the picture is acting like a portal, and it's allowing negative energy to come in.
Yeah.
So I did get rid of it.
Yeah.
I took it to another dump to get it destroyed.
Perfect.
But I felt I had always thought it was so beautiful, but as time wore on, it became it was losing its aesthetic sense to me.
Yeah.
It wasn't as beautiful to me anymore, and I didn't really know why.
Yeah.
But I would think that I was picking up on whatever was negative coming through it.
Right.
So have you experienced something like that, something that acted as a portal?
Sure. I mean, we do have objects that have been used in, you know, different rituals.
Yes.
With the intention to bring things through to do what that person wanted it to
right.
do.
I was thinking it was either that it had been used in rituals of some kind, or else it was in a family where a lot of bad things had happened so that it was imbued with this energy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So one or the other.
We have found cases where people use religious artifacts as kind of a mockery.
And repurpose them.
Right.
I think that most likely what happened to this. Very disconcerting because it was so beautiful.
Right, right. That is interesting. I think you did make a good move.
Thank you. I think that's a good case to get rid of it, don't you?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, good.
With those situations. I mean, we have had cases where things sometimes do get worse, but it definitely seems like the activity was contained within that that object.
It seems that way.
So getting rid of it definitely seem to solve your problem.
And with the objects, we do have one specific object from the Bridgewater Triangle that had the intention to possibly bring something negative through to do something negative to who is intended for. And we have that in our museum separated from the other objects. With our darker objects, we like to put them in a separate room. And for example, like I may put them in a specific case and have an herb circle around them and things like that that make me feel like it's staying in that box.
You build
and
a
it's
barrier.
Contained.
Yep. Because I was going to think, you know, that plexiglass or glass doesn't quite do it for me, but doing the herbal or crystals or stones,
right?
I think does it.
Yeah, yeah. We definitely think that glass isn't going to protect anybody. And, you know, we mainly use the glass in cases to protect the objects from living people, you know?
Yeah.
But some people believe that cases will contain things, which is okay.
Have you had cases where people would get rid of an object and it comes back?
Yes.
There was Liza? One, wasn't it? Liza.
Liza. Yeah.
That was pretty creepy.
Okay.
Yeah.
I saw the video.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, she's definitely, if we had to have a, you know, top five out of the, you know, hundreds of objects we have, she would definitely be at the top of the list.
And one of the reasons the gentleman, he was suffering a lot, but to quickly sum up the story, we asked him, why didn't you destroy it or get rid of it if it was causing you so much trouble? And he said, I tried. She keeps coming back. He had thrown her in the dumpster and the garbage man took her out and brought it back to him. So,
yeah. That was a tough case, and cases like those where the story seems like, okay, there could be a normal explanation. There could be, unfortunately, something medically wrong with this individual, psychologically. So but thankfully, we have some friends that are, you know, professionals when it comes to that line of work, and we can have them do a cursory analysis on individuals like this. And this gentleman checked out to be okay. He checked out to be fine. She said that he was just going through a rough time in his life, and it seemed to be revolving around this doll. So, and that was one of those cases as well where he wouldn't tell us where he got this object from.
Yeah, interesting.
Was he dabbling in something that he wasn't supposed to be, or he didn't have too much knowledge in? We're not really sure, but that seemed to make everything better when the doll went away, which is good, you know?
And very interesting what the doll has done since it's been in your museum.
Yes. Yeah.
We can't keep her still. She doesn't play nice with others. We did have her in a doll section, and when we first incorporated her into the museum and when we went downstairs, because dolls are the big thing, thanks to Hollywood. I mean, even if they're not haunted, they're always sent to us. So we put her in that section. We go downstairs, and all the dolls' heads were turned around, or their whole bodies were turned around. And it happened about three times until we realized there's one change that happened to make all this happen. So we had to put her on a shelf, and now she just moves around on that shelf on her own.
Yeah, we do have, you know, a lot of security cameras throughout the home base museum. And we do catch some stuff, but she's one of the objects that loves to show off in that way and defy literally the laws of physics, going against gravity and lifting herself up.
And you've got that on film.
Yeah,
too,
we have a few videos of it like that.
I saw one of them. It's not like it just kind of slouches over.
Yeah.
It actually sits up and adjusts.
Right, adjusts her arms and yeah. Oh yeah, it's creepy. So yeah, we will have that video playing if anybody comes to the Power Expo on USS Salem.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
We will have that video playing with Liza there. Yeah. So yeah.
And you know, we're just about at the bottom of the hour here, almost time. So people are probably wondering what we have on the table here. So when we come back, we will get into some of these haunted objects.
Terrific.
And we will be back in just a couple minutes. Welcome back to the show. Tonight we have Cody Ray Desbians and Satori Horace, and they have brought along some of their items from the Traveling Museum of Haunted Objects, Oddities, and
Curiosities.
Curiosities, that's the other one. Yeah.
It's a mouthful.
It is. So, what have we got here?
We kind of took a little from each section, so you kind of get a taste of what the museum is. So this mask here is kind of front and center there. So that mask originated from Africa. It is a original, you know, tribal mask, authentic tribal mask that was brought over to the New Orleans area probably about 25 years ago now by a gentleman. And of course, being investigators, we want to learn about different religions. So I took a couple trips down to New Orleans to learn about Voodoo. That was my question going down there. So I wanted to interview this gentleman who owns a shop there, and he happened to be the owner of this mask. And you know, we weren't talking about haunted objects at all or anything like that. And I walk in, I sit down, and he brings out this big cardboard box, and inside of the box was six masks that belonged to his ancestors. And this mask was separated from the other five for some reason. So, of course, my question was, you know, why is this mask separated, you know, from the other five? And he goes, well,
because he doesn't like the
others. He don't like it. Exactly. Well, he did. Yeah. So what happened was he said that whenever he held this mask in his hand, he would get visions of tribal dancing. And he knew that it was his, you know, belonged to his ancestors, but it really freaked him out for some reason. The whole shop would fill up with this campfire smoke smell that he couldn't explain. He was afraid he was going to start losing business because customers would see shadow people coming in, which was very interesting. So he says, you know, I need this gone, and you can have it. And
he said that to you?
Yeah. So I took it back home to Massachusetts. And these masks, they're made with so much energy and intention. Each mask, the whole purpose of them, when they were being carved, the carver would envision a different god or deity and put all of that intention into its product. And they believe that the wearer of the mask would then embody this god or deity when they're doing their tribal ceremonies. But this mask in particular, we think could be something else.
So you can't really see through the eye holes of this mask, which kind of leads us to believe it wasn't really used to, you know, necessarily dance around it with the person wearing it itself. We did some research and found it looks incredibly similar to African death masks. So what they would do is when somebody passed away, this mask would be given to that person, put on that person in the ceremony in the hopes that they would pass on and meet their ancestors on the other side as they should. So that's why you don't really see through the eye holes, because that's not what it was used for. So the intention of passing over and transitioning is definitely put into this mask.
How did you find that out?
Lots of research. I actually spent, how long did I spend?
A long time.
Just researching different kinds of masks. And one day I was about to give up. And as I'm looking through, all of a sudden this picture shows up and it looks just like one of these masks, but it has some, you know, difference in the beard, the threading of the beard and things like that. But all of this is similar. And so I'm wondering, like, why is there some similar qualities to this? And doing research, they stuffed it and put these shells on it and all that. And that was part of their death ceremony. And you could never see through the eyes of it. So if you couldn't see through it, chances are it was a death mask. So I just found as much evidence as possible. Putting it in the museum has been a wild ride. He's in the top five most haunted objects.
Okay,
also.
So what has happened with that mask?
Well, the claims have definitely lived up to their reputation for sure. He's been on the traveling exhibit pretty much everyone we've had. And there's been a few times where there's been some scares because people thought that something was on a fire. And the whole smoke smell.
People evacuating their show tents and cons and things like that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And having, you know, the owners of buildings come over to check, make sure everything is okay. And so that is one thing. Also had some voices, audible voices heard from the mask.
Yes, we did get a disembodied voice. So like we said, I like to say good night and thank you. And I hope you have a good day to our objects when we leave the museum. And as I said, you know, good night. We walked out of the museum and from this mask directly in the section, you hear a loud echoing voice, but with an accent. And he says, good night. Like he didn't understand what I was saying, but
he
heard
me. Did it sound
me.
African, like an African dialect?
You could tell he wasn't native to English speaking. So, but he just repeated what I said because he probably heard me say it so many times and just wanted to be respectful back, but it made us so happy because we both heard it. We just looked at each other
We both heard it.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
Yep. Strange EMF readings that we can't explain off of it.
It's
up
wood.
To 5 milligauss, which is really interesting. Just a lot of odd stuff happening with it.
You know, Native Americans too have these masks and they use them in ceremonies.
Sure.
And we were talking to Mike Winfield, Mike Bastine, and.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot his first name, Winfield. They wrote a book together, Supernatural, Iroquois Supernatural. They were talking about masks very similar to this. Those who create them believe them to be alive. And they have masters that take care of them, and they have to be qualified to be taking care of them. Sometimes the hair will grow on the mask.
Interesting. It's
and all, they don't like to be stared at either. This is the Native American.
I keep
ones,
looking
this,
at it.
this might be a different situation, but you know, there's just so many aspects to the paranormal that we don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely agree. What else do you see?
The death mask. Would they traditionally be buried with the person?
No, I believe it was just for the ceremonies, ceremony. From
oh,
what
yeah.
I understood.
Okay. Yeah.
I didn't, you know, I. Would be lying if I said I know everything about these ceremonies, but I know that they definitely used them in the ceremonies, and I believe they would take them off and prepare them for, you know, either it was in one specific family line or it would be used for specific people for this different roles.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fascinating.
Yep. So he's definitely interesting, for sure.
What else?
Okay, what about the fire truck?
Fire truck.
Yeah.
That's
another interesting story. So that originated from Pennsylvania. And this was a case we had to work when the whole world was closed down. So we did this one through a video call. And what happened was, so a mother and a young son, they were at a church fundraiser in their local town in Pennsylvania. And I believe he was 7 years old. He gets drawn to this fire truck and wants to buy it. So the mother paid the few dollars for it, and they bring it home. And this becomes his go-to toy. This toy he's playing with every single day. And everything is fine. A couple weeks later, the mother starts noticing that it seems like he's having, you know, conversations with somebody who's not there. And she just left it alone as an imaginary friend. And then one day, her son comes running over to her hysterical, crying, saying that there's a very sick boy that is around the fire truck, and he's wearing a dress. He's wearing a white dress with blue polka dots, which we thought, well, that's very descriptive.
And, Johnny.
Exactly. So we had a chance to interview the young gentleman with his mother's permission, and he was giving medical details that I knew from my previous medical things that I've gone through with cancer. And he said that he saw that he had something on his chest, which, you know, reminded me of a port. I had one when I was sick. So he was saying things that he shouldn't have known.
Yeah.
And it seems like it only would happen whenever he would play with the fire truck. So we asked the mother to do an experiment. He was getting kind of scared to play with it at this point. So we said, okay, leave it in the house, keep it in the playroom, but put it on a shelf so he can't reach it, and just leave it in the vicinity and see if that spirit of the boy comes. And we did that for a couple weeks, and the spirit never came back. So we believe this is one of those occurrences where this acts as a trigger to kind of bring out that spirit. The other thing was, we asked, you know, can you call the church and see where they got, maybe they know where they got the donation of the fire truck from. So she called and said, the person at the church said that, you know, they didn't know for sure where it had come from, but a lot of toys had been donated by one of the local children's hospitals in the area that were getting rid of their toys and replacing them with updated ones. So could that be where it came from? It definitely fits the story. I would like to believe that. So everything has gone back to normal in that home. And, you know, we think that, you know, the spirit of this little boy probably won't, you know, come out unless a child is playing with the truck. So we don't think, you know, he's stuck in the truck or attached to it, you know, all the time. We think he's, you know, probably in a good place somewhere. But when he sees the truck being played with, he probably comes out and checks in on it, you know.
Especially with the child, because I'm sure he feels some sort of empathy with another child.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
Yeah. Yep. So that's that story.
We have a couple of dolls here.
We do. We do.
Going to talk about Angel?
Go ahead.
So is this Angel Fire?
This is Angel of Fire.
Yeah.
So we had gotten Angel of Fire. That's kind of what we gave her the name of, but she was nicknamed Death Angel by the family we had gotten her from.
Oh, goodness.
So this came from Massachusetts. A woman was at a secondhand store, and she felt compelled to buy this tree topper angel. This was 2019.
Ooh. Christmas of 2019. Yeah.
She decided that it was going to go great with their Christmas tree. They buy real Christmas trees in their house for her and her husband and two young kids. So she brought it home, put it on the Christmas tree, went to bed that night. Everything seemed perfect. They awoke in the middle of the night to the smell of smoke, but none of the smoke detectors were going off. They went downstairs to notice that the Christmas tree was not just on fire. It actually put itself out. So it must have caught fire, and it was just the stick from what they described it to us to be, which is a wild claim since she's perfectly fine and she's made of cardboard and porcelain. So she said, maybe it's a good luck angel. We woke up in time to find this. It put itself out. Maybe she's protecting the family. So it's not yet Christmas of 2019. They go out. The husband's an electrician. He checked the outlets and everything like that. He thought maybe electrical of some sort, nothing that they could find, but they replaced it anyway.
But is it electric? Does she have a little light in it?
Nope. No. She's perfectly, yeah. So they got a new Christmas tree because it wasn't yet Christmas and they wanted to give their kids a good Christmas. Brought the Christmas tree home, put her back on the tree. I think they were traumatized at that point to the point where they had bought fire extinguishers, they told us, because they were so traumatized that that happened that they could have probably not caught it in time. So they went to bed that night, again, woke to the smell of smoke, ran downstairs to notice that the tree was actively on fire this time. They were able to put it out. They were terrified by then. They kind of got rid of Christmas of 2019 that year. They decided to skip it. Christmas of 2020 rolls around, and 2020 wasn't a good year for anybody. But this family decided that they were going to put this tree topper back on a new tree. She felt that for some reason she had to. The husband tried stopping her, but she felt that she had to. And we asked her, and she said, I have no clue what compelled me to put this on top of the tree, but I had to. Yep.
Third tree.
This was the year after, too. So they put the angel back on the tree. Guess what happened? The smell of smoke again. They run downstairs to, this time the tree had engulfed in flames so badly it was catching the curtains. It was catching the entire side of the house. They were able to get the children out. The fire department had to come and everything like that. I believe they moved right after that because that was not the house that we went to. So they decided that this angel was actually bad luck and it was trying to take their lives is what they said. Now, this was a little out there for us. We were a little skeptical of the story because, you know, what she's made out of. But we believed them. We showed them we cared, and we took this angel off their hands anyway. So in the museum, nothing had happened. She showed up with a little dirt on her. So we cleaned her off, put her in a case. We did an interview, and I said something along the lines of, she may never prove her claim. What if she's never, doesn't actually have a spirit attached to her? And I don't know if she took that as a, you want to see me do something?
Yeah, challenge.
But we go down to the museum after that. We're going to do a live stream, and Cody picks her up out of the case. And I said, don't move, because she was covered in this soot substance. It's actually on her right now
that
if you
looks
look
like
at her.
Soot.
Yeah. So with that, there's soot in her case. We decided to bleach test it. Somebody recommended it, where if it stays black, that means it's soot or soot type substance instead of mold or dirt. And it stayed black, so that means it was some sort of substance similar to that. That's not as bad as she was. More recently, around this Christmas, we had to put a camera on her with motion detection and all that, and a fire extinguisher with us, because she was covering herself more and more as we approached this most recent Christmas that just passed. Thankfully, nothing happened, but she is definitely covered right now. So yeah. She's in the top five also.
Well.
We do have a handprint on our wall, too, a very strange handprint.
Yeah, it looks like the same.
It looks like a child finger painting on the wall. We have photos of it in our case file.
Gee, I wonder why someone would get rid of such a pretty little doll.
Oh,
you know,
exactly.
Makes you wonder.
Yeah, just a little fire now. What's the big deal?
Okay.
That is amazing. I wonder what that connection is, though.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe originally there was a fire and... What if she got burned? Maybe somebody died.
I don't know. We found the company that made her. It was
Gifts of Gorham.
Gifts of Gorham in 1970s.
70s and 80s is when these were made.
So who knows what happened between the 70s and 2019 to this item? You know, was she in another fire before that, and they cleaned her off, and she ended up in a thrift store or something?
Somebody that doesn't like Christmas very much from a past traumatic situation. We have no clue.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Because her clothing. It's all flammable, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. She should have.
Her
hair should have melted.
She should have survived.
I have no idea.
So she'd just get sooty, but she wouldn't burn.
No, we thanked her for that because it shows that she's kind of respectful for not burning down our museum, but she's proving her claim. So we said, as long as you keep it to yourself, you don't cause any trouble.
I'm smelling it. Are you smelling it?
Yeah. Are you smelling it?
I'm smelling it.
Well, you're closest to her.
So as long as she's respectful, that's when we tell her you can prove your claim just safely. And that's exactly what she's done. So we can't be mad at her for that.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's quite a story. It's quite a story.
Are you planning? Do they want it back? Are you planning on keeping it?
No, they don't want
they
it back.
They do not want it back.
I had asked how it ended up in their new house. So what happened was after, you know, the last fire, I guess after it was put out, the firemen let them go in and take belongings that were salvageable. And the mother took
there.
The angel, and I don't
the
think the family and... knew. And then once it got to the new house, like the family had like a family discussion. It was like, this thing has to go.
Just in a bag, just get to
it. The rest of the family knew that, you know, the angel was the cause of all this. And the mother was finally starting to realize that maybe the angel wasn't trying to protect them, but it was the cause of all of this. So,
you know, the case of maybe being enchanted.
Yeah, exactly.
Kept, you know, a spell cast or something, but. Why?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So are you guys planning on keeping it?
I like her.
Yeah, we like her.
How long have you had?
Since early 2020.
Yeah, this was this past Christmas.
For a while,
yeah, this past Christmas was the first Christmas away from her family. And
that's when
all
she acted up.
Happened, yeah.
So are you still calling her the Angel of Death?
We call her Angel of Fire,
Angel
because
fire.
Technically she hasn't taken a life that we've
that
obviously
know of.
Known of.
Yeah.
So we are just being respectful, call her Angel of Fire, and I think she likes that.
Could you smell the smoke?
No.
It's fading now.
Well, there's two items. Which do you think it was her,
or
do you think it was the mask?
Yeah,
one of the two.
I'm thinking it was the doll because I was staring at her.
Could have very well been.
But it could have been either.
Yeah.
So what about this one?
Okay.
Little clown there. So this one, a gentleman lived alone in a condo, and he was at a marketplace, and he's drawn in. He has that magnetic pull. He doesn't really like clowns. After the whole case was over, I asked him, you know, again, one of the questions we asked, why did you purchase this? He goes, I have no idea. I don't like clowns, but something told me I had to have it. I thought it looked nice. So he lives alone. He brings it home, places it on his nightstand table in his bedroom. goes to sleep that night and is awoken by what he described as a loud, maniacal laughing coming from everywhere but from nowhere at the same time. Every time he thought it was coming from one direction, it would start up in another direction. Absolutely freaks him out. He does not like the paranormal at all. He jumps out of bed, grabs his keys, and drives 45 minutes away to his brother's house and starts pounding on the door to let him in. And finally, you know, the brother thinks he's crazy, but lets him in.
You missed the part where he slid at him.
Oh, yeah, the clown. Yeah. So after this laughing happened, the clown started sliding on the bedstand.
Supposedly it slid towards him.
Yeah. So that absolutely freaked him out. So finally convinces the brother to let him in. And he spends the night and refuses to go back home until the brother goes and takes the clown out. And so finally he did. He wanted him out of his house at that point. So the brother goes in, grabs a T-shirt out of the brother's closet, wraps it up, places it on the front steps, and we get a phone call to come pick it up. And, you know, that was one of those objects where we find that there's an acclimation period when it goes to a new location. Mm. It didn't do anything for about a year.
Really?
And then about a year later, it started swiveling inside of its dome by itself.
Just a little bit.
You know? How is it positioned? Is it like glued? Or
so it's you know, freestanding.
It's freestanding?
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep. So it's made of glass or porcelain, one of the two. I think it's glass.
Both.
And
it German? German origin?
So it has, we couldn't find any markings on it at all, which was odd. It was probably made by the thousands at one time in some factory. But something happened to this one along its lifetime. Where it has, you know, something with it.
I think it's a jokester. I think he wanted to play a joke on his new owner.
Yeah.
And that's nothing, what happened.
We haven't heard the laughing yet. That's for sure.
No, we haven't.
No. Nope. Nope. Interesting.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
So did you quarantine this one as well?
We did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And nothing happened.
Nope. Nothing happened during quarantine period. Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah. It's an odd one. And then this toe tag here come from Woonsocket, Rhode Island. And the story with this one, a woman was mowing her front lawn one summer day and notices something glistening in the sun. So she goes and picks it up, thinks it's a coin. Maybe she struck rich and it's a nice old coin. So she brings it inside. And as soon as she walks through the threshold, she starts noticing something strange. She sees a shadow person walk past the hallway.
No kidding.
And doesn't put two and two together that it could be attached to this. Her house, you know, has never been haunted. Later that night, she starts examining it a little closer with a magnifying glass and notices that there's a number on it and the name of a cemetery that she recognizes, local cemetery. She's like, wow, that's strange. I have no idea what that is. So she calls up the cemetery, and the gentleman who maintains the cemetery answers the phone, and she tells a story, and he's just as surprised as she is. He goes, well, ma'am, that is a toe tag, and it's supposed to be on a body that's buried in my cemetery, and I have no idea how it ended up in your front yard. And she goes, oh, my God, so I don't want it. I'm going to bring it back. You can have it back. And he's like, no, I don't want it back. It's already out of the ground. I'm not opening up that can of worms. So the next person she called was us because of paranormal activity. It started getting worse. She's getting poked on the shoulder, and
really?
Things were starting to really freak her out. So she donated the toe tag to the museum. And we have seen some shadow people, but you
know. A tall, skinny shadow at one point.
A
tall, skinny shadow we've
male
seen.
Male, female, could you get a
I impression? Couldn't tell you. It was just a tall, slender shadow, and it super, super tall.
Right.
A couple people have also claimed to see it, and they said it's well over average human height.
In the museum?
Mm-hmm.
In the museum, and on one of our traveling events, mm-hmm. somebody saw a shadow with it. So if you ever visit one of our traveling events, in every section that we have a space where you can write down if you're feeling something or you experience something. And over time, we hope to see a pattern around some of the objects. And we definitely have with the mass. People have, you know, a lot of notes saying they feel the smoke and stuff. So
what's interesting is that casket handle next to it came from a house down the street from that original house a couple years later. Just recently, we had gotten was given this object by somebody that we had met, and they said that they found it in their front yard after, you know, doing some renovations, and they felt they were having some activity with it along with a casket nail that we did not bring tonight. But they found that in their front yard. We looked at a map and found that they were both directly, you know, across or near these local cemeteries.
So the question was for us, how does this stuff end up in somebody's front yard? And the first thought I was, well, maybe somebody was cremated and the ashes were spread in the home before she purchased the house. But But we confirmed with the cemetery that this was supposed to be on a body that wasn't cremated. So that was odd. So then we start looking at the history of this area and find that in the 1950s, there's this really odd weather event that happens where two hurricanes happen back to back, dropping about 30 inches of rain in this whole area. And unfortunately, that, you know, rose all the nearby rivers and lakes, dislodging a good portion of the caskets. They were going down Main Street, ending up in people's front yards, some getting washed out to the ocean, never to be returned again. People are waking up to go to work in the morning to a mess in their front yard. And unfortunately, they couldn't locate everybody. And the people that they did locate, it was very hard to determine who they were. So if you visit some of these cemeteries, you're most likely looking at a stone with nothing under it, unfortunately. So that would definitely be cause for unrest and somebody to be you know, maybe visiting with these items for sure, you know.
Wherever did you get the little container? This container didn't come with a clown.
No,
it didn't.
Yeah, okay. those are just for museum purposes for sure.
Oh, they're great.
Yeah.
Cuz we don't want people going, "Oh, a coin," and just taking it.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's a great idea and that perfect.
Yeah. they nice. Do work good. Yep. So like Satori said, they're mainly to protect the objects.
We tell that to people that's not for them to keep them away from you. It's to keep you away from them.
Right. Yeah. Some of the things we have in the museum are extremely old, date back to, the Egyptian time frame, some of the items.
Really?
So, we need to have special cases. Some of them are climate controlled and things like that to protect the objects, from any spirit from coming out or anything like that.
Yeah, obviously stuff that you don't want anything to happen to.
Right, I mean, exactly.
You have to protect them.
Right. And plus we're taking care of this stuff for people, you know, that may want them back at some point in time. So we need to take good care of them.
Or not.
Not one person is called to get their item back yet.
Really?
No.
So what about the nail? You said, what happened with the nail?
There is a casket nail. We did not bring it in today, but it is a very, very long nail.
Hand forged,
very, very long metal nail.
Right, and that was found. So the woman who found the casket handle, her husband actually found it. They were doing an addition in their garage to build a bigger space. And found that while digging it up, and then found a bunch of these nails that they had somebody look at who said that they were casket nails, which fits the bill for that area. And so we think all of this stuff might either just have, energy from that event kind of lingering around, like a residual type energy, or it could have, the person that the casket belonged to.
Wondering where the rest of it is.
Yeah. So who knows? There's probably a lot of items like this scattered throughout that whole area that just haven't been found yet and probably will be found. So, we got these two calls almost 2 or 3 years apart from each other. And we were, flabbergasted that they were pretty much neighbors from each other and had similar stories,
But what was the activity around the nail in particular?
So the nail and casket handle came together. So it was hard to determine which one was kind of giving off the activity. But as far as the casket handle, it was very similar activity when she brought it into her home. Shadow people and
strange
things like that.
Energy around these items.
Just feeling weird. We get a lot of that claim. Just feeling off and strange, and the energy just kind of radiates from the item. So I think it also depends on what type of person you are, how sensitive you are to the feeling this type of energy as well. So interesting stories for sure.
Absolutely. We thank you for bringing these items with you.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
We're running short on time.
Goes by fast.
Anything coming up that you want to mention?
Sure. So we're always doing different events. If you follow us on social media or anything like that, you can definitely check them out. I know our website is paranormalcouple.com.
And we're a paranormal couple on any social media.
Yep. And we'll definitely be at the Para Expo and USS Salem.
Exciting.
There. And we'll have a whole room of objects there. So probably close to 50 to 60 objects we'll bring to that.
If we can fit that many.
If we can fit that many in that room, I'm going to do my best. So, and you'll be able to read the stories of each one. Each one has displays and things like that. So,
I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see them.
Yep. So thanks for having us on.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much
for coming all the way up here.
Oh, it's
we
a pleasure.
Appreciate it.
Yep.
Great.
Any final thoughts?
I don't believe so. I just want people to know that there's a lot of misconceptions when it comes to haunted objects. Not everything is evil or, you know, demonic.
True. Yeah.
Most likely, and that activity is extremely rare. Most of the time, you know, it's just a person, just, you know, like you or I, who is just checking in on something that they love. And you know, they mean no harm, and they just want some respect and somebody to talk to, I think. You know?
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful approach, is having respect, thinking that those are humans attached to these things because they're emotionally attached to them. Mm-hmm. I think that's an excellent approach.
And Ghost Hunters is starting to air on Travel Channel March 16th.
Whoa, so, really? Yeah, all so right.
Not just on Discovery Plus, so definitely check that out.
And when are you going to show up on that again?
You may see us here and there. I don't know if we're obligated to say contractually.
Oh, but soon, maybe.
But yeah, you might see us on there. Yeah.
Great.
There was a season that's been running on Discovery Plus.
We've been featured on that season.
That's going to be appearing
on the second episode.
Channel.
Yep.
Is this another season coming on Travel Channel, or is it that one?
So it's that season.
Yeah, so they're going to start airing some of those episodes. Those episodes were just on Discovery Plus for a while, and then decided to start airing them on regular cable. So. So there's some good episodes. I'm glad the show's back for sure.
Oh, that's super.
Yeah. Cool. That's
yep.
Cool. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you two at the expo in May this year, 20 to 22.
I think we have about 2 minutes, so I have to ask, what was it like growing up?
That was one of my questions.
You know,
please.
A lot of people would think it's strange, but I thought it was completely normal. I mean, I did get some strange looks at, you know, when kids were talking about their parents' careers. You know, my dad's
That's
a lawyer, my dad's
yeah.
a firefighter, my dad's a ghost hunter. I thought it was normal, but people looked at me like I had seven heads. But I always did get the community talking. About, you know, I had an experience once. So I guess it was looked at in a nice way as I got older. When I was younger, children didn't really understand it as much. But
right, yeah.
It's been a wild ride.
Was there anything that was happening at home when you were younger, when your dad started this up?
You know, not too much, mostly because my mom always told him, don't bring work home with you. And he always told the spirits, you know, I have six kids at home. Be careful. You know, you should be afraid coming home with me. So nothing ever really did. But I was never closed off to the possibility of the paranormal. So sometimes I would have experiences because I never knew it to be anything but real. So maybe some sensitivities like that as a child.
Did you have any nightmares?
You know, honestly, not too much. Sometimes I would have nightmares, but it was mostly just regular dreams of me worrying while my dad's out working or you know, things like that. Pretty usual.
Did you ever feel any connection with ETs during this period? Or was it like a completely different category that you never...
I don't know.
Maybe
I did, and I just don't remember it. You know, that's always a possibility.
I'm finding that there's more and more connection now between there investigations with ETs being there and incensed.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if maybe you picked up on that, because I have seen a couple of things as a child.
Really?
ET-wise, yeah.
Interesting.
I knew at 10... I'm saying this on public television.
Yes, you are.
That, yeah,
to
I
the
know.
Whole world to hear.
Yeah, the age of 10 that there were ETs, that we weren't alone.
Wow. Yeah.
Because I saw them.
There's so many more reports coming out.
I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe 100%.
100%. 100% that there's something else out there.
And we're getting.
We'd be ignorant to think we were the only ones.
Pictures at one of these places that we do investigate, and in the windows, and I've seen some ET faces.
Wow.
In the windows.
That's so interesting.
So there's an interesting connection that I never would have thought, well, plausible, possible, but not plausible. But now I'm understanding there's just so much we don't know. We compartmentalize and departmentalize everything so that we can understand it. But it's a whole lot of interfacing just of dimensions that we're just not. Sometimes we access them, but we don't understand it.
Yeah. Oh, I hear you.
That doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Well, Cody Satori, thank you very much. You want to give up your website again one more time?
Sure. It's paranormalcouple.com or theparanormalcouple.com. It leads to the same place, so either one.
And Facebook, you've got a Facebook page.
Yeah, Paranormal Couples Haunted Museum on Facebook, and TikTok's The Paranormal Couple, Instagram, The Paranormal Couple.
You'll find us.
Yeah.
You're not hiding.
No, we're not.
Yeah. Yep, send us a message and say hello. We'll answer you.
Okay,
say hi.
We'll do that. Thank you again.
Absolutely.
And we look forward to seeing you in May.
It's going to be great.
Thank you.
May 21 and 22 on the USS Salem in Quincy.
It's going to be fun.
It is. It's going to be a great event.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Okay, thank you. And That takes care of another show.
Yes, and thank you everyone for watching.